Welcome to the TEFL Training Institute podcast, the bite-sized TEFL podcast for teachers, trainers, and managers. Hello, everyone. Welcome to our podcast today.
That is Tracy Yu.
And this is Ross Thornburg.
And today we have with us a special guest, Matt Courtois.
Courtois.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Thanks for coming back on, Matt.
Oh, it's always my pleasure.
So one of the things that I think makes you an unusual individual, except not including your choice of glasses or
these glasses thermal are
underwear,
awesome.
Is that you love grammar.
I do.
I think you're quite a cool person in other ways, but this seems like such a deeply un-hip trait to have.
Yeah, I guess like on the internet and stuff, there's nothing worse than being called a grammar Nazi.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, funny that, isn't it? It's not like a grammar Nelson Mandela or something, right?
It's
a grammar Nazi. That's funny. Because you don't get like Lexis Nazis and pronunciation Nazis, do you?
Yeah. And there's something about grammar lovers, I think, that's
hard to love.
Yeah, but I mean, I think they're so pedantic at points, right? Where they pretend not to understand people. And they pretend that, like, by misspelling their, for example, that they totally can't understand the meaning of something. And so I think it's the way grammarians handle themselves. And, like, I think I have a love for grammar, but I'd like to think I don't approach it in that same way, you know?
Yeah, right.
I give a healthier relationship with grammar.
So today we're going to be talking about our relationship with grammar and how functional and dysfunctional it is. So we're going to talk about three things. The first one is, what is grammar? The second one?
So why does grammar have public relations problem? And number three?
All right, so what mistakes do we make as teachers when teaching grammar?
So something that I think most people think of when they think of grammar is rules, right? That like grammar is about being right or wrong. What's your kind of take on it, Matt? Like what would you see grammar as being?
Well, I think grammar is trying to systematically summarize the language that is spoken and written by native speakers. So the reason I think I say it that way is because it comes from the speakers first, and grammar represents what the speakers are doing and writers are doing. It's not the other way around. It's not like there's a boardroom of language geniuses that are saying, like, this is how everyone should be speaking.
Yeah, and then people start speaking like that.
Yeah.
So does that mean that we're all descriptivists? So I think the distinction, if I'm right, is like, if you're a descriptivist, that means you believe that grammar describes language, but if you're a prescriptivist, you believe that we have rules about grammar and that we need to stick to them, right?
I look at those terms in a little bit different way.
Yeah.
I think descriptivists are people who describe the language. So these are the people who go on to corpus and analyze the data and figure out how is the language being used. Mm. Whereas prescriptivists then prescribe that onto other people. So as teachers, we are all prescriptivists, I would say. I think the typical view of prescriptivism is that you're saying that, like, you shouldn't split an infinitive, or you can't end a sentence with a preposition. All of these old archaic rules. A teacher who's saying things like, you shouldn't split an infinitive and you shouldn't end a sentence with a preposition, they're not prescriptivists. They're just wrong. They're teaching wrong grammar.
Or definitely like grammar that is not useful now. Mm. Like maybe there was a time when that was true.
My understanding is things with like ending sentences with prepositions, it was always done in spoken English.
Wow.
And it was just this guy in the 18th century came along and was saying, like,
this is how you should do it.
Yeah, because he viewed Latin as a much more noble language, and so that was a rule in Latin.
Huh.
And it was never a rule in English. I think that was his effort to make it more like Latin.
I wonder if there's also some aspect of class and classism that's part of this. I think that's definitely true in pronunciation, and that if you look at the sounds that are in standard British English. They're all in like received pronunciation, which is only spoken by, I think it's less than 2% or something like that of the British population. But they're also the landed classes, the richest, most privileged people. That's how they speak. So I wonder if also some of these rules come from this is how the educated people speak, but that's not necessarily how people speak.
There is an importance to letting people in teaching less formal grammar because it is used. And I think if we're teaching very rigid grammar and formal grammar, like if somebody goes to a baseball game or a restaurant in the US, like they're going to sound so pompous, you know? and I don't think we are giving a fair representation of the language when we present only that upper class rules.
Yeah.
I think that's like just teachers and always maybe tell the students you have to use the language this way. So, you know, didn't give the students options or context on when and how you use the language. So they just keep using it the same way in different contexts. But it's probably not appropriate for them to say that.
I think this is one of the problems, though, with a language classroom, right? In that I find that, you know, students need to learn formal and informal registers of language. But the classroom is a formal context. So I think it's very difficult for us to ever really teach informal language to students. I know we're getting a bit off the topic of grammar here, but like swearing is something that happens a lot, right? But you can never really teach swearing in a school because you're in a school, right? And that would be unprofessional. But if you looked at it from a very objective point of view, you might say that these swear words are some of the most common phrases. And, you know, if someone swears at you, you should probably know what they're saying. But because of this formal setting, it's difficult to get away from that. Okay, so why does grammar have this sort of public relations problem where it's kind of seen as not being very cool? It's, you know, people talk about grammar Nazis. Like, why do you think that happens?
On the micro level, one example, I saw somebody like talked about, you know, like you're doing this wrong or something on the comment board. And they spelled like Y-O-U-R instead of apostrophe R-E. And inevitably, the grammar Nazi stepped in and said something about, you know, it should be Y-O-U apostrophe R-E. You idiot. Like, and then he said, you see, conjunctions are important. And so that's not a conjunction. And
it's a contraction.
Yeah. And so my reply was, if you're going to be pedantic, at least get your terminology right. But I think this is the face of grammar lovers. Yeah. The people who love grammar like present it in such an aggressive way, in such a
right and wrong way.
Yeah, isn't it? Condescending. Like, and it's like, he misspelled your, you know. And the other guy clearly understood what he was trying to say, and he was just being annoying. And he's just saying, "I'm smarter than you." That's all he's doing, and that's a lot of people's relationship with grammar. But on the macro level, I don't know. I think it's cool. Like in the U.S., we have Webster's dictionary for like, I'm talking about like Lexis now. What is it in the U.K.?
A lexicographer, maybe, or something.
Lexicographers.
I don't know. Yeah.
But they do such a great job of at least trying to get people excited about the 10 new words of 2017.
Right. We all know it's like fake news and you know, Brexit and things that are very much in the public consciousness, which are interesting, right?
Yeah, and I think a couple of years ago it was an emoji, like the one with the smiling face of the two tears coming off. That was the newest word, the hottest word of 2015 or something, and it's people get excited about it. People talk about it. It
gets into newspapers, so they're really sort of doing a good job of marketing Lexis, and not just to language teachers, right? Like to the public.
Yeah, and embracing this kind of newness and liveliness of Lexis, and with grammar. Grammar's very alive too. Like, I mean, you know, when we were kids, like you wouldn't say I'm liking this or I'm loving this, right? Like you would, like you can't put that in the continuous tense when we were kids, right?
Yeah. But McDonald's does.
Yeah, well, McDonald's do now, does it. Facebook used to have this thing, Matt Courtois is, and then you can fill in the rest of the field. And so a lot of people started putting, because you can't say Matt Courtois is like this movie. You'd have to say liking this movie. And so it's completely acceptable in certain registers to use
state verbs in the continuous tense.
Yeah.
So I'm just showing off in case people think I know nothing. But
drop the bomb, Ross.
I only have like two things. I think another sort of maybe newer way of looking at grammar is that grammar is not necessarily rules, but it's tools that people use to communicate meaning. And the example I always use for this is in a previous job, someone that worked with me sent an email to my boss and they CC'd me in the email and said, "Dear Gary," let's call him, "Ross has been asking me to pay for this thing." And I read it and I thought, oh, like, you make me sound like, you know, I'm over there pestering you all the time. You know, Ross has been asking me to do this. And I realized, you know, it's just a word choice that she's made here, you know, or a grammar choice, right? Instead of saying Ross asked me to or Ross has asked me. There's no way she's aware of the difference in meaning. But I think for me, that's one of the problems with how you teach grammar is we often teach, can you change the sentence from the past perfect to the past continuous? We don't really get people to look at, like, what's the difference between saying Ross asked me to do this and Ross has been asking me to do this, or the difference I made a mistake or Matt made a mistake and a mistake was made. I think a lot of the time in class we focus on students getting those right rather than looking at the shades of meaning that are included in those.
An example that I think is really good of a way we teach grammar wrong. It's in a lot of course books that I've ever taught. They've had this when they cover past continuous. They talked about, I was doing X when suddenly Y happened.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And in actuality,
yeah, like I was watching television when the phone rang.
Yes, that is true. That is a way the past continuous is used. But that's how. When's the last time that you said, like, I was doing this process when suddenly Y happened? You know, like,
you can draw a very nice timeline of that.
Yeah, I think it fits nicely into that nice little tidy rule, you know? And so, but in actuality, the way we end up using past continuous a lot more often is to almost refer to, like, internal processes. So, like, to say something like, oh, I was just thinking about you, or I was considering doing that, or...
But, yeah. Okay, I got the point, but I'm sometimes thinking about grammar and feel really confused, because, yeah, of course, in reality, and we probably use different grammar for certain purpose, or which one is more often, right? Like what you, the example you just mentioned. But we need to cover those basic stuff. Yeah, we can't just pick up something we always say and then teach the students.
I think we're teaching it because the reason we teach it is because it is just a rule that's tidy and it's nice. We can draw a nice timeline and...
Yeah,
but it's not actually that useful to be able to express that thought. Like, and you can tell it's not useful because we don't actually use it in daily speech. Conversations. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the whole grammar is just rules or regulations and help people to memorize in general and what they say, what they don't say, but we don't really evaluate, do we use them in real life and how often we use it.
It's an easy way to show results of a class, right? To say that, oh, you learned these 5 grammar points and you could test clearly on them and you could assess how much learning happened. It's a shortcut because it doesn't show how effectively you can use it. And I want to go back to something you said, but talking about how all these grammar rules, we try to make it simple and clear understanding. And, like, we shouldn't be trying to do anything with grammar. Grammar is representing the way that language is being used. And if it's complex and messy, then grammar shouldn't be trying to make it clean and simple. Like, it just represents what's already there.
Matt, thanks very much for coming on again.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
See ya.
For more podcasts, videos, and blogs, visit our website, www.tefltraininginstitute.com.
If you've got a question or a topic you'd like us to discuss, leave us a comment.
And if you want to keep up to date with our latest content, add us on WeChat at TEFL Training Institute.
If you enjoyed our podcast, please rate us on iTunes.